Thousands of Poonawasis will be attracted to visit this temple, and it is all because of the inspirational leadership and the vision of His Grace Radhesham Prabhu. Personally, we have been associated with each other and ISKCON for the last many years, and is a source of great inspiration for me. And I am very happy that he agreed to be the speaker this evening, because it's very difficult to find a replacement speaker when Radhanath Maharaj is not speaking. So I was not mentally prepared for this. So as a trade-off, I am going to Pune on Sunday and giving Sunday feast there. So we have a transcendental transaction. So I'm very grateful that he is going to be sharing some of his realizations this evening. Let us welcome him by loudly chanting. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuh Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Hare Krishna. First of all, I pray at the lotus feet of my spiritual master to empower me with a drop of his wisdom and drop of his mercy, by which I'll be able to speak something meaningful and helpful for all of us in our lives. Last year, maybe a year or two ago, I was with a group of students from NIT Suratkal, NIT K, Karnataka. So we had gone to the Malpe beach, not probably 2 years ago, many years ago, probably 4 or 5 years ago. We had gone to the Malpe beach for a evening program for the students there. And surprisingly enough, we found we were the only ones in the beach, and there was nobody there except us. It was such a clean, nice beach, and we were wondering why people don't crowd that place. So it was a time when tsunami had happened in Sri Lanka. Just a week ago it had happened. So of course, we had heard about it, but we never thought people would be so fearful to come near the ocean. Anyway, of course, we had our program there in the ocean beach. So that is why this topic today, to love or fear nature. As you all know, the tragedy that happened in Japan, the whole world is talking about it. So at Chopari Temple, I have always seen that they take the current issues and they give a Vedic perspective to it. And it really makes a lot of sense when you do that. Because, you know, when you talk from the Vedic literatures, oftentimes people say, you know, I was born quite some time before, so I don't have the fear of birth. And my death is quite far away, you know. I don't think I'm going to die so soon, you know. Most students say that, you know, I may live for another 70, 80 years. You know? And I don't seem to be having any diseases now. I'm quite hale and healthy. And old age seems to be far away also. So oftentimes people have difficulty realizing birth, old age, disease and death. So it would be very worthwhile to take the contemporary issues and give it a Vedic perspective. So nature is often addressed as Mother Nature. Mother is supposed to be one who nurtures you, one who loves you, one who cares for you, and protects you, provides for you. How can one fear such a mother? Why should one fear such a mother? Like you see here, God's love for us can be seen through the nature around us. Like you see, everything that we eat, like grains and fruits and vegetables, milk and all these things, none of these things can be created by man, despite all his advancement in science and technology. Srila Prabhupada often used to say, you know, you can't eat nuts and bolts, isn't it? Although you can produce them in millions of quantities. You need to depend on God for water, for air, for grains, fruits and all these things, which are all provided through nature. I don't want to remind you of the prasadam now only. But still, why I showed this? Because we all eat every day, and to eat every day we depend on nature. Is it not true? To get all the bountiful harvest from nature. And certainly any man or woman with a little common sense can understand God should certainly be a person with a heart. Heart means love. Head means intelligence. In our body, we all have a heart and we also have a head, isn't it? Heart involves emotions, feelings, sensitivity. Head means reasoning and analysis, evaluation, decision making and all these things. So we all have a heart also, we have a head also. In fact, even figuratively speaking, we need both head and heart. Otherwise you can't have a balanced life, isn't it? People who only have the heart sometimes tend to become sentimental, isn't it? And emotional and impulsive, isn't it? On the other hand, people who only have the head, they can become hard-hearted. They can become dry. They can become impersonal in behavior. So even figuratively, we all need a head and heart to have a balanced life so that we don't go to the extremes. Now, if we all have a head and heart, what do you think? Will God not also have a head and heart? Surely. Your father is a living person. His father was a living man, isn't it? And his father was a living one. So if you go above father of father of father of ultimately all your father and grandfather and great-grandfathers, is he going to be a stone chunk or a living person? Ask yourself a common sense question. Because we see two things in this world, Chetan and Jad. That is that which is matter, that which is spirit. So, and the living things have ability to think, ability to feel, ability to express their willingness and all that. But non-living things do not have any such freedom. So, because we are living, we have a head and heart, ultimately God also has to be a living person. He has a head and he has a heart also. And how can we know he has a heart? From the love that he shows us through the nature. Like just now I showed you. No industry can produce this type of nice prasad. You see, all these things. So we could show many things like this from nature. Please repeat this verse. Ime janapada svriddaha supakvaushadi virudaha vanadri nadi udanvanto Yedante tava vikshitaihi. See, Maharani Kunti is telling Krishna, tava vikshitaihi. By your glance, viksha. The vikshaksha means to see. Tava vikshitaihi. By your glance, Krishna, all these cities and villages are flourishing in all respects because the herbs and grains are in abundance. The trees are full of fruits. The rivers are flowing. The hills are full of minerals and the oceans are full of wealth. And this is all due to your glancing over them. Like this, one of the prayers Maharani Kunti offered to Krishna. There are a class of people called naturalists. They say, don't bring in God. Everything is provided by nature. We also agree. But unnecessarily don't talk about God. So Srila Prabhupada used to challenge them very profoundly with a very logical argument. So Prabhupada once challenged a scientist. What would you call nature as? As mother or as father? Yeah, would you call nature as father or mother? What do we call nature as mother? Anybody knows? What do we call mother nature? Huh? Why don't we call, tomorrow onwards I'll start calling it father nature. What do we call it mother? Yeah? She provides food to us, he's saying. Okay? And that's the correct answer. Actually, she produces many things. Is it not true? You see, the grains, the fruits, the cereals, the flowers. Is it not? Everything comes from the nature. So who produces a baby? Mother produces or father produces? Mother produces. The child comes out of the womb of the mother. Similarly, from the womb of nature, all these things are being produced. That is why she is called mother. Isn't it? But can a woman produce a baby without a man giving her a seed? Imagine if a woman became pregnant and parents are asking, hey, how did you become pregnant? She says, I didn't do anything. Somehow I became pregnant. Is it possible? Naturally, there is a man who has given the seed. Ask this question. Who gave the first mango seed to the earth? After which that mango tree produced thousands of mangoes. And each of those seeds produced another thousands of them. And it keeps going on and on. You see? Who gave that original seed to the mother earth to be able to produce so many mangoes? Now, not only mangoes. You can talk about every fruit. You see? Have you ever seen somebody combining a desktop computer and laptop computer to produce a palm top computer? Can they ever make like that? Isn't it? You see, but you find in this nature, in this creation, we find somebody is giving the seed to the mother, earth, and she is able to multiply. All these things. So, Prabhupada quoted Bhagavad Gita. Krishna's famous verse. Tasam brahma mahat yonir aham bija pradah pita. Krishna is telling. I am the seed giving father for all the 8.4 million species of life. So, Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita, that I am the original seed giving father of all living beings. And Mother Nature is able to produce wonderful things because I am giving her the seed. There is a particular picture you might have seen in Back to Godhead magazine where Mahavishnu is lying and he is glancing and there is a picture of Durga with 10 hands, you know. And the glance of Vishnu is falling on her womb. What is the meaning of that picture? That is explained in Brahma Samhita. That Vishnu's glance is called Shambhu. Shambhu, who is Shambhu? Lord Shiva. And the glance is falling on the womb of Durga. Which means through the agency of Shiva, Lord Krishna or Vishnu supplies all the seeds to the womb of Durga, the material nature. And then material nature is able to produce all these wonderful things. Like here you hear the rivers are full of water, the ocean is full of Navaratnas, the mountains are full of minerals, the cow's udders are full of milk. And then so many things happen by the glance of the Lord on the nature. So, when Lord glances at the nature, then nature produces all these wonderful things. You see? Just like, again, Prabhupada's examples are so lucid to understand. Prabhupada said, like a man sometimes has some 4 or 5 guests coming to his house. And then as soon as he gets some guests, he turns to the kitchen and just claps hands or he just looks at his wife. And immediately wife gets a signal. Some guests have come. She goes to the kitchen and starts becoming very active. She makes some tea, you know, cooks something to offer to the guests. In the same manner, when Krishna glances at nature, the nature becomes active. You will read in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the dawn of creation, the whole nature was created, but it was non-functional. Nothing was moving. The birds were not flying. The trees were not moving. There were no waves in the ocean. Everything was stagnant and standstill. But when the Lord put his glance and he entered the universe, then everything started becoming activated. Everything started functioning and moving. So, in the same manner, here she is telling, Kunti Maharani is telling, that Tava Vikshitaihi, my dear Krishna, by your glance, the whole nature is flourishing and functioning so beautifully. You know? So, here comes a very important point. You see, that the modern outlook to nature and the Vedic outlook to nature is totally different. Now we are talking about God's sensitivity and God's love for us. When you smell a rose flower or when you drink amra ras, isn't it? How many of you like amra ras? Isn't it? Isn't it? We would like to keep drinking more and more, isn't it? So, yeah, that's a practical proof of God's love for us, isn't it? So when we drink amra ras or when we smell a rose flower or lotus flower, so we can see God's creation is so delicate and so beautiful, so nourishing and so satisfying. You go to even the software companies, nowadays everywhere they keep greenery, all over the company. Because you get so much stressed. You can find sometimes in Pune Hinjawadi Park, some people sitting with a laptop under trees and working. They are so fed up in the office inside. So close to nature, you feel like you are in the lap of the mother. Is it not true? Like a child in the lap of the mother is very comfortable. Similarly, the nature is feminine. The nature... Now here a very important concept has to be understood, that there is a presiding deity behind everything. Say, for example, will you find a beautiful house without an owner of the house? Anywhere have you seen, especially in Bombay, how costly it is? Isn't it? Is there any house just kept open and nobody is there? There is no Malik of the house. Every house has an owner, isn't it? Similarly, every planet has a presiding deity. For example, the presiding deity of the eyes is the sun. Why? Without the sun, we cannot even look at our own hands. We cannot look at anyone or anything. And all the light-emitting substances in this world, they get their ability to emit light only from the sun. First, they get their ability, store it, and then later on they release it. So without the sun, nothing can emit light. That is why it is said the presiding deity of the eye is the Surya, the sun. Similarly, the presiding deity of the mind is moon. Now, what is the connection between moon and the mind? Have you seen sometimes movies, you see hero and heroine are looking at the moon, showing the moon. You've seen that, isn't it? Why don't they show out the sun? isn't it? Or sometimes they say after marriage people go for honeymoon, isn't it? Do they go for honey sun? Because the honey, why they call it moon? Because moon has a connection to the mind. You must have heard in the, you know, mental asylums and all, people go very crazy on full moon day. Do you know? Yeah, they become more mad because it's connected to mind again. And also the tides in the ocean, you can see in your chapati, on full moon day, the tides are very high. You can see that. So the full moon has effect on people's minds. You can see. Like, you know, I used to chant more rounds on every Tuesday. So one Swami, one Bhakti Vishwa Madhava Maharaj said, on Ekadashi day, you should chant more rounds. Because on Ekadashi day, the mind is more agitated. He said that. So the presiding deity of the mind is the moon. Similarly, there is presiding deity for everything. Similarly, the presiding deity for the material nature is Durga. Durga Devi. As we call her Durga Mata, Durga Devi. She is personified material energy. You see, many people portray many things with a feminine form which just cannot be accepted. For example, some people put Bharat Mata, one lady, standing with a Bharat flag. But Rabindranath Tagore, in one of his poems, he says, where the knowledge is free, where the world is free from fear, where the world is not divided into fragmental parts by narrow domestic walls. He says that. Like, Pakistan was a part of India before. And nobody had any problem with Pakistan that time. And now once, after 1947, the demarcation is done. Now we can see how much people talk about Pakraman. Isn't it? Just you mark the line between these two places and then that became another country, this became another country, you see. And then people mark India as Bharat Mata and they put a picture. But actually, the personified material nature is Durga. That is the form given in the scriptures. Similarly, for the earth, there is a Bhumata, we say. She is a personified female form. But she can come in any form. She can come in the form of a cow. She can come in the form of a goddess, Devi. In fact, scientists, through their research, they have come to understand that earth is not just dead matter. Earth is an organism. This is accepted in the field of science now. And they are studying more how the earth is functioning like an organism. Just like, for example, a man, woman unite, they produce children. Is it not true? Similarly, you sow a seed, the earth produces so many things. It's an organism. But what makes this earth produce all these things? Because behind there is Bhumata. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, there is a great king called Prithu Maharaj. So when he became the king, the earth was practically barren. She was not producing anything. And there was so much starvation and people were suffering. So this king asked the Bhumata, Mother Earth, why are you not giving any grains and fruits and cereals and all these things? So she said, all the things that I produce, these are all actually meant for the pleasure of Lord Vishnu or Lord Krishna. But I am finding that all the people on this earth, they have become so exploitative that they are taking everything and enjoying themselves without caring for God, without caring for the laws of God. They just don't care. And they are acting whimsically just to gratify their own senses. So she said, I have all the grains with me, but within me, I am not going to give it out unless people become devotees of God. And then Prithu promised her, Prithu told her that I will propagate Krishna consciousness. You give everything. Then she started producing everything subsequently. So she is calling everyone a thief. Anybody who takes the grains and enjoys without offering to God, she calls them a thief. In the 4th canto, you will find. So here comes an important point that when we take everything from the earth, like whatever we saw just now, and we use it all for our own enjoyment without reference to God, then the earth reacts differently. You see here, see what Krishna is saying here in Bhagavad Gita. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matta sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante maam buddha bhava samanvitaha. So he's saying, everything emanates from me. I was reading this Vishnu Sahasranam Stotram. There's a very beautiful verse there. It says, Dyau sachandrarka nakshatra kam dishobhur maho dadihi vasudevasya viryena vidridani mahatmanaha sasurasura gandharva sayakshora garakshasam jagat vashe vartatedam krishnasya sacharacharam. You see, Vishnu Sahasranam glorifies Vishnu. But in the middle of Vishnu Sahasranam, here it says, Jagat Vashe. What is the meaning of Vash? In control. Jagat Vashe Vartatedam Krishnasya Sacharacharam. It says, the whole world is in the Vash of Krishna, Chara Achara, moving and non-moving beings. And what all are in his control? Dyau, Sachandra, Arka, Nakshatra, Kam, Dishobur, all that he's saying. The earth, the sky, the moon, the nakshatras, and then the asuras, the suras, the rakshasas, uragas, all types of different living beings also, and all the planetary systems and everything, they all are in control of Krishna, he says. And same thing Krishna confirms in Bhagavad Gita, Maya Adhyakshena Prakriti, he's saying. The whole Prakriti is working under my direction. See, Aksha means to see with eyes. Adi Aksha means seeing from the top. Seeing from the top, supervising. Sometimes you'll see a mother, sometimes she may leave the child to play, but then she goes into the kitchen and she's peeping through the window and watching what the child is doing. Isn't it? The child is doing something naughty or the child is doing properly. Is it not true? Similarly, although we don't see God watching us, God is surely watching us. Just like sometimes inside a cooling glass in a car, when you're sitting, you can't see people inside a car, but they can see you. Similarly, God's eye is unblinking. Chakshur yasana rishyati is constantly watching every living being. And he is also watching the nature and ordering the nature. He is ordering Durga. Now you produce all these things, wonderful things. Then she produces. Then he says, don't produce now. She stops producing. She simply follows his order. She works like a shadow. Just like you move the hand, the shadow also moves. Like that she works. And that Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita and many other scriptures also. So here comes the important point I was telling you. There is a strong connection between God and nature. When God smiles, nature smiles. When God is upset, nature is upset. As simple as that. The simple formula, you can remember this one small quote. Yasmin tushtam, jagat tushtam. When Lord is satisfied, the nature will give bountiful harvest, as Kunti was telling. When Lord is dissatisfied, then the nature also will not provide for all the needs of the living beings. Once two farmers came to Prabhupada. One was an atheist and another one was a believer of God. So so Prabhupada was talking to devotees about those two farmers. Now one devotee asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada, he's an atheist, but he's also getting grains. He is sowing the seed and he is getting grains also. And the other fellow, he is sowing seeds and he is getting grains also. Now what is the difference between the two? And then Prabhupada said, that farmer who is a believer of God, he recognizes his dependence on God. Whereas this fellow doesn't recognize his dependence on God. Then the devotee asked Prabhupada, okay, if he doesn't recognize dependence on God, how does he lose? What is his problem? That is the problem. The problem is, you see, for example, if you are growing paddy, rice field, say you get about, 1,000 rupees profit. If you grow tobacco, you will get 10,000 rupees profit. Which one will you do? Okay, how many of you will go for tobacco fields? Raise your hands. You will get 10,000 rupees profit monthly. If you go for rice field, you will get 1,000 rupees. Which one will you do? How many of you will go for rice field? Really? How many of you will go for tobacco fields? There are some few honest people raising their hands. They are very straightforward. See, naturally, people say, there is a proverb in Tamil Nadu, they say, Panam entral pinamum vayai pilakum, they say. What is the meaning? If you say money, a dead body will also say, huh, where is the money? No clap. See, people are so much after money, even a dead body will jump up when you say money, So, if somebody doesn't believe in God, you can 100% confidently say that they will go for tobacco. So Prabhupada went to one country where they were growing so much tobacco. And they were starving for food. There was very little food. Food grains were not available. And Prabhupada said, will people die without cigarettes? But people will die without grains. But nobody wants to grow grains because you don't get so much profit in that. You see? And these guys are able to smoke so much cigarette, but they are dying without grains. Because they are atheistic people, you see. So when atheism spreads, there will be starvation of, there will be starvation. There will be lack of grains. See, I told you systematically, how by atheism, people will have a lot of currency notes, but no grains to eat. You see, when people become atheistic. So the more people go away from God, they will go away from values. They will go away from character. And they are going to bite one another. Beat one another and bite one another and try to snatch and enjoy and usurp one another's property. It's very natural. I heard sometime before Kali Yuga came, there was one farmer who sold a part of his land to another farmer. And the second farmer, one day he was plowing. And suddenly he came across a pot filled with gold coins. He took it out and he went to the first farmer and said, sir, you sold the farm to me, but these gold coins are so costly, it is equal to almost 100 times the cost of this land. So naturally this land, it belonged to you before, so I want to give this to you. And that farmer said, no, now that I have sold the land to you, this whole part belongs to you only. You keep it. And they both had such a fight. You keep it. And then they went to the king to complain. And then they both told the king, my dear king, this whole country belongs to you. So better we submit the money to you. And the king said, yes, it's a duty of the king to take tax. So I will take 25%. Balance money, you both divide and take it. This was before Kali Yuga. isn't it? After Kali Yuga came, you know what must have happened. Is it not true? See, the second farmer was plowing the field. Tuck, he heard a sound. He looked here and there. Nobody was around. Slowly he took out. It was filled with gold coins. He immediately put his towel and covered it. And then that another farmer's wife told that farmer, I saw this fellow taking out something. No? So this fellow made a hole inside his house and dug it inside. That fellow found out. Huh? And then he went and complained to the king. King said, whatever it be, bring it to me first. And once these fellows took it to the king, you know what happened next? Yeah. Because it is said in this Kali Yuga, those people who are in such kingly positions, they only fill up their pockets and they drive away all of the people. So the king took all of the gold coins and drove away both the farmers with empty hands. So I am telling you this. This story teaches us the service mentality and exploitative mentality. So when we understand that there is God watching above, not just psychologically we have to imagine, or not just sentimentally we have to imagine, it's a reality. God is in control. We are not the ultimate controllers. Yes, we are jivas, we have some control over the nature, but we don't have absolute control. And we can see that. Like Prabhupada was in Honolulu, near the ocean beach, you know. And some devotees and some scientists were talking to Prabhupada. They said, Swamiji, you know, modern man has made such a tremendous progress. Just see, you know, 747 jumbo jet is flying aboard in the sky, such a huge plane. You know, man has made such tremendous scientific advancement and you say man has no control. And Prabhupada said, okay, if petrol gets over, it has to come down. Is it not true? What kind of control is that? They said, but Swamiji, still man has some control at least. Prabhupada said, some control means no control. The meaning of God means one who cannot be controlled by anyone. As soon as we are controlled, we are not God. So, every one of us in this world, we have some control over some small jurisdiction, you know. We can control something to some extent. But the modern people have made one big mistake. What is it? They thought that, I'll tell you in Prabhupada's words, I quoted from Prabhupada Bhagavatam. I'll read Prabhupada. Yeah. See, Prabhupada is saying, human prosperity flourishes by natural gifts and not by gigantic industrial enterprises. The gigantic industrial enterprises are products of a godless civilization and they cause the destruction of the noble aims of human life. The more we go on increasing such troublesome industries to squeeze out the vital energy of the human being, the more there will be unrest and dissatisfaction of the people in general, although a few only can live lavishly by exploitation. Like we are saying, India mostly lives in villages, 70% of the population. But now that 70% is becoming 60 and 50 and 40, it is reducing now. And people are migrating towards cities. Like you see, the cities which can occupy a few thousand people or a few lakh people, now they are occupying millions of people now. You see like that. So, why do people come to Bombay, or why do they go to Delhi, or why do they go to cities? Because everybody comes to make money. Because they know money is honey. Because with money you can buy everything in this world. And then they have huge industrial enterprises, their life becomes like a rat race. And even all the thousands and millions of people who join the rat race, after going round and round in the city, which is like a maze, they remain a rat only. And the millionaires remain, the rich become richer and poor become poorer, it is said. So, the industrial enterprises, they spoil the human energy, which means they extract so much human energy. People leave early in the morning and come late in the night. They work very hard. So, Prabhupada is saying, in the same purport, he is asking, what is the need of clubs, slaughterhouses, brothels, cinema houses, what is the need of liquor shops? Like that, he's asking a question. These are all artificial commodities. See further what Prabhupada says. The natural gifts such as grains, vegetables, fruits, rivers, hills of jewels and minerals, and seas full of pearls are supplied by the order of the Supreme as He desires. Material nature produces them in abundance or restricts them at times. The natural law is that the human being may take advantage of these godly gifts by nature and satisfactorily flourish on them without being captivated by the exploitative motive of lording it over material nature. Now, what is the meaning of lording over material nature? See, when we tell people about spiritual life, most people are not interested. The reason is they do not know who they are and what is the meaning of life. If only they would know that, they would be living much differently. So, I would like to go back to that triangle. See, Shastra says the Sambandhanyan, they're shown here. The Ishwar, Jeev and Maya. Or we can also call as matter. There is Jad, there is Chetan, there is Ishwar. If you know this triangle, you know, then you know the essence of all philosophy. If you just can understand this triangle. You see, just in the previous slide I have shown about the condition of Jiva. See, when the soul leaves, see, when the soul leaves the spiritual world and comes to the material world, he forgets his true identity as a soul and foolishly thinks himself to be the material body made up of flesh and bones. This talks about the difference between our body and soul. We are the soul and we are trapped in this bodily shell. And now the jiva thinks that this maya has so many nice supplies which I can exploit and enjoy and I can have control over. Like Prabhupada gives example of opening organized slaughterhouses. Isn't it? And aborting children in millions. They're using science and technology, but for torturing living beings and torturing themselves. Like I was telling you, growing tobacco fields and torturing themselves more. So, because they do not know there is an Ishwar watching, and the Ishwar, Krishna, is giving all the rules and regulations in scriptures, what is to be done, what is not to be done. So if the jiva acts according to Krishna, then the maya will provide him abundantly, and he can live happily. If the jiva acts independent of Krishna and breaks his laws, then maya gives him suffering. So like you see in our temple, Radha Gopinath, Radharani is holding a beautiful garland or she's holding a lotus in her hands, isn't it? Lakshmi also holds a lotus, isn't it? But one of the expansions of Swarup Shakti is Durga Devi. In the material world, the same Shakti, you must have seen the picture, the Durga with a tongue outside with a trishul in her hands, is it not? So why the Shakti becomes so torturous? When the living beings misuse the energy of God for wrong purposes, they suffer. So Maharaj is going to come in a few minutes. So I'm going to conclude. I'll just show you this. These are all natural calamities shown here. Floods, famines, you see? Earthquakes, hurricanes, volcano. This is a recent thing in Japan. Tsunami in Japan. So, in the brief time, this is one point I would like you to remember as a take-home point. Yasmin tushtam jagat tushtam. If we please God, we can be happy. And if we go against God's laws, we'll be unhappy. Now, whatever is happening in tsunami, we certainly feel sorry for those people, so many people who died in the tsunami. You see, all the panchamahabhut, they are beneficial, they can be disastrous. Like earth can lead to earthquake. Fire. Rana Sai Maharaj ki. Thank you very much, Harek.
Hare Krishna. So we are very happy to have with us this evening His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj. So as many of you must be aware that the ISKCON Youth Services has been started many years ago, way back in 1995, under the inspiration and the vision of His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj. And he has been one of the most inspirational figures in these Prerna festivals. And we are now celebrating today is the 93rd Prerna festival. And we'll be happy to celebrate our 100th Prerna festival in November with Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj. As the world is discussing about Sachin Tendulkar's 100th, we are happy to also inform you that the Prerna is also reaching its 100th. So, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj is a very senior disciple of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. If you have come across the book Journey Home, he describes how he left home at a very early age. In the early teens, in the age of 17, traveled all across the world searching for God. And then he came to India, associated with many sadhus, read many holy books, and then finally took shelter of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. And then he was leading a life of a pujari in New Vrindavan in very austere conditions. But his simplicity, his devotion, his dedication to the mission of Srila Prabhupada brought him forward into the preaching line. He pioneered some of the best college programs in America. And then in 1986-87, he came over here to Chowpatty. And this wonderful project has been inspired by him. He's the person behind the vision of this entire project. And a very exemplary community of devotees with various other extended projects like Bhaktivedanta Hospital, Gopal Garden School, and every year we go on an annual pilgrimage, Dham Yatra. This year we went to South India in the month of December and January, and this October we will all be visiting the holy Dham of Vrindavan with His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj. We are also very grateful to him for providing so much of encouragement for the youth preaching here, both in Mumbai and Pune, because of which so much of funds could be allocated in the initial years and even now for these preaching activities. And we can see that as a result of this, thousands of youth, their character is being reformed, and what they would normally be doing in their youth is completely transformed into spiritual activities. And they are now able to provide such a wonderful example for society. So we are extremely grateful to His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj for His inspirational example, guidance, His regular satsangs with all of the youth here. And we were not so fortunate this year that he came in December, but only in April we are able to have his association in this Prerna festival. But you should also know that he has a very, very busy schedule. And tomorrow night he is leaving for Europe and London. Let us express our gratitude to Radhanath Maharaj by loudly chanting Hari Bol! Hari Bol!
Kyan Timidandasya Kyanan Janachalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I am very grateful for this opportunity to be with all of you this evening. Special gratitude to our special guests. The topic is nature. Should we love it or should we fear it? And His Grace Sri Radhe Shyam Prabhu has just given us a comprehensive, insightful, and very realized explanation of how we could see the world through the eyes of the scriptures and the enlightened beings. Recently, I was in Barsana, a village near Vrindavan in Uttar Pradesh, where every year Bhaktivedanta Hospital does an eye camp where they remove cataracts and put lenses in people's eyes who otherwise would go blind, and they have no money for any medical care. When you have a cataract, you're not able to see anything the way it really is. The lens of knowledge, wisdom, enables us to actually see things according to the perspective of real truth. The cataract that is covering the vision of people in this world is avidya, ignorance, which is primarily influenced by ahankar, or the false ego. As long as we have a misconception of who we are, we cannot understand our relationship with each other, with God, with the world, or with nature. We chant this verse, Om Agyan Timidandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yenatasmoye Sri Gurave Nama. These days, especially if you go into the West, one of the most popular words is guru. There are fitness gurus, and there are stock market gurus, and there are plumber gurus. Anybody who teaches anything is considered a guru, and that's the word they use. It's interesting how a very sacred Sanskrit word comes into the modern world in such ways. But actually, a guru is one who restores our original sight by removing the cataract of ignorance from our eyes so we can see things in truth. Who really am I? And what is my relationship with nature? Should we love it or should we fear it? On one hand, the most beautiful things in the world are being provided by nature, and on the other hand, the greatest catastrophes of this world come about by nature. It's like this beautiful garland has lotus flowers on it. So beautiful. And a nice sunny day, people go to scenic places on holidays, where there's beautiful beaches or trees, forests. Radhe Shyam Prabhu was talking about the corporate headquarters of many companies, and I've seen all around the world, they usually have beautiful gardens around them. So that, because it's beautiful. looking into a full moon starlit night, feeling feeling a very nice ocean breeze, hearing the sweet singing of nightingales and cuckoos. It's very pacifying to the heart and to the mind. And then the next day, there's an earthquake. Or there's a massive cyclone with thunder and lightning, or a tsunami. So is nature nice or is nature not nice? Nature's both. But even if it remains very sunny and perfect temperature and everything is beautiful and the nightingales sing in the night and the cuckoos sing in the day, still, by nature, the power of time is going to make everyone grow old, get diseased, and die. Padam padam yadvi padam natesham. Within this incredible beauty of nature, there's also danger at every step. We just don't know what's happening or what's going to happen. A massive tsunami can come and crash down and destroy your entire nation, a major part of it, or a tiny little germ, a little virus bug that can't even be seen with the eyes, maybe in your body, preparing to destroy it, and then to spread to others, and to create an entire epidemic. In Europe, during the Middle Ages, about one-third of the population of the entire continent was destroyed by the bubonic plague. And Europe was a very, very powerful country at the time, with militaries and kingdoms and armies. And who was spreading the bubonic plague? Fleas. It was little tiny fleas. Fleas are so small that they make mosquitoes look like elephants. They're tiny. And this little tiny flea that you can hardly see was spreading it around and destroyed a third of human race in a powerful continent. So whether it's a gigantic cyclone, tidal wave, or a flea, or a germ, there's always dangers in this world. And ultimately, time is invisible. You can't see it, you can't touch it, taste it, smell it, hear it. But it's so powerful that the most powerful militaries cannot stop it for a moment. You can't bribe it. You can't seduce it with beauty. You can't philosophically defeat it. Never stops. And with each moment, it's in the process of making the highest Himalayas into powder, drying the oceans, burning out the sun and every star in the sky, and destroying the earth. That's the power of time. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, time I am. Mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. Krishna says, ultimately, this entire nature is working under my control. It's the most beautiful thing. If we see it through the eyes of love, we understand it. Not only what we see, but why. This is what the Bhagavad Gita and the great saints teach us. Not only how material nature works, but why it works the way it does. Ultimately, there's no such thing as death or destruction. It's a perception. Najayate mriyate vakadachin nayambutva bhavata vanabhuya. That the soul, the atma, the life force in everyone, the flea or me, or we, that life force is unborn and undying. Mamayavam so jivaloke jivabhuta sanatana. The life force is a part of God. Like a spark from the sun, qualitatively of the same spiritual, eternal substance as Krishna. That's who we are. Just a small part. And the Gita explains the Atma, the soul, cannot be cut into pieces by weapons, cannot even be moistened by the water of a tsunami, cannot be burned even by the most blazing fires. Nahanyate hanyamane sarire. It is not slain when the body is slain. And science tells us that matter is not destroyed, it's just transformed. Matter is an energy that is transformed from one particular form to another form. Right now we have this body. If you burn it, then the water element in the body goes into the environment to create moisture, but it exists. And the earth element becomes ashes. So physically, things are just being transformed. And from the spiritual perspective of the true self, it just moves on to another place. So nothing's really destroyed if we see it in the light of truth. Now the Gita teaches that an enlightened being is very balanced, doesn't go to extremes. One extreme is to take this philosophy that everything's eternal, you're eternal, so why should we care about anything? Who cares if this world just pollute it? Doesn't matter. Let there be wars, let there be death, let there be suffering, it's all illusion. Why should I take care of my health? That's one extreme. And another extreme is to be so attached to these things that we become so confused and bewildered and stressed out when things aren't going the way they should. And when somebody dies, we become so depressed and alone. But the balance that the Gita teaches is paradukaduki. That an enlightened being, another person's suffering becomes my suffering. And another person's happiness is my happiness. And we feel for the suffering of people. if we're on the bodily concept and we think that only my immediate family is my relatives, then we really feel for our relatives. But if on the spiritual concept, we realize aham bija prata pita, that Krishna is the seed-giving father and mother of all living beings, and therefore we are all related, then we have compassion and we feel the pains of every living being. Every aspect of human life, whatever caste, religion, race, sex, we feel for all species. The cows, the goats, everyone, the birds. Because we can feel their happiness and their distress. This is enlightenment. So when there is a great tragedy, like what has happened in Japan, and similar things happening all over the world, maybe caused by a tsunami, maybe caused by earthquakes, maybe caused by drought, maybe caused by cruel humans with great political powers, maybe caused by diseases like AIDS epidemics or hepatitis epidemics or cancer. Whatever it may be, a devotee feels. But a devotee understands that every living being is an eternal soul. And even if none of these things happen, if things go right, time is going to kill everyone. So therefore, we should feel that a similar compassion, even for happy people living in Malabar Hill, Altamont Road, Chopati Beach, very successful, very nice, but at every moment being destroyed by time. And they're going to die. And their children and their parents and everyone are going to die. What about them? Whether it comes as an earthquake, or whether it comes with a disease, or whether it comes with old age. We want to help people to understand that they're beyond birth and they're beyond death. We want people to understand the real joy of the heart. The joy of loving God and loving every living being in that love for God and sharing that joy with everyone, anywhere. The purpose of the fearful situations of nature is meant to be an impetus to love nature. In religion, especially in some of the Western religions where I am coming from, the primary conception of God is a very fearful personality. If you don't obey him, he's going to smash you. And he really has the weapons to smash. Eternal condemnation in hell. Can you imagine that? If you sin, eternal damnation where you suffer for the rest of eternity. That's a pretty fearful type of God, isn't it? And there's instances of sinners getting thunderbolts crashing against their heads and all sorts of, you know, laws. God has ordain these laws, obey, or you're damned. That's an aspect of God. In order to somehow or other convince people to love God,
there's this element of fear. Yes? Sometimes a parent doesn't want the child to be afraid. But if the child's doing the wrong things that are seriously going to disturb their life in the future, sometimes the parent inflicts fear in the child. If you do this, I'm going to do this to you. Yes? Now, children don't like that. But sometimes it's necessary because it's the only way they listen. So this conception of the fear of God and the conception of the fearful conditions of material nature are to help to sober us up to understand what will really make us happy. It's ultimately meant to bring us to love God and to love nature and to love each other. In the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we read about Krishna. He's such a loving God. He's a little baby. It's not the kind of God that I'm used to in the West. Damning people to heaven and hell. He's crawling around stealing butter from gopis. What does that have to do with God? Nobody's afraid of Krishna. In fact, Krishna's afraid of Yashoda. This is so beautiful. When Krishna was stealing butter and feeding to monkeys, Yashoda Mai came with her little stick, and Krishna ran away in fear. And then she caught him. And she went to tie him up, and he was trembling and crying. And Kunti Devi, Radhe Shyam Prabhu quoted a beautiful verse from Kunti Devi. Another verse was she's remembering how Krishna, who is feared by fear personified, is afraid of Yashoda. And who's Yashoda? She's not a military general. She's a very simple, delicate mother. A gopi. Krishna showing the power of love. The person everybody's afraid of is afraid of displeasing the love of his devotee. So to the degree we actually awaken our love for Krishna and understand the beauty of Krishna, the charm of Krishna, the grace of Krishna, and the love that Krishna has for us, which is beyond this world. It's between the soul and Krishna. And because we've neglected that love and we've rejected that love and we're so mesmerized by the things of this world, the fearful stuff, it actually wakes us up to understand, you know, what is my real need and what is my real wish? What is my desire? When Srila Prabhupada, our Gurudev, was in Calcutta, and it was the Japanese that was bombing Calcutta, they were dropping bombs on Calcutta to take over India. And at that time, Srila Prabhupada was cooking puris. The air raids were going off and everybody was running to the bomb shelters underground and running to the basements wherever they can find shelter. And they said to Prabhupada, Abai, Abai, come. But his name is Abai. So he was Abai. It means fearless. He said, let the bombs come. Krishna's waiting for me to offer him my puris. And he told us he was thinking when he was hearing. He was thinking, Krishna has come in the form of these bombs. Let me offer him puris. Bajahure manasri nandanandana abhayat charanaravindare. Fear is the most prominent human quality. It's either behind the scenes or very much in front, motivating people in so many ways. So much of industry, so much of economy, so much is based on fear. Fear of disappointment, fear of failure, fear of disease, fear of death, fear of poverty. And the more you have, the more you have to fear losing. But Govinda Das explains, if just we just pray to our mind to take shelter of Sri Nandanandana, this beautiful cowherd boy who charms us into the realm of love beyond the temporary conditions of this world, then we become fearless. And when we recognize the beauty of God and love God, then we actually see that loving, beautiful hand behind every situation. And that doesn't make us hard-hearted. That makes us very soft-hearted. On every level, body, mind, and soul, to help people to relieve their sufferings. But it equips us to serve people to the highest, most comprehensive way. Not only to resolve the suffering of the physical and mental state, but to help people to resolve suffering forever. When there was an earthquake in Latur, another earthquake in Bhuj, in Gujarat, our Bhaktivedanta hospital went with many, many teams of ambulances and to try to help people. Because it's devotees' duty to help people on every level when they're suffering. To help them physically by helping them with their broken bones. By giving proper medications. By helping to rebuild their homes. They helped them emotionally, because emotionally the suffering was terrible. People had lost their mothers, their fathers, their children, their husbands, their wives, their property, their wealth, their everything. By encouraging them, by appreciating them. And ultimately, what the people appreciated the most was the spiritual care they were given. Because it actually empowered them, not only in this situation, but forevermore, to see through the lens of truth. That the soul is eternal, and nothing can destroy it. And while we're compassionate to the soul suffering due to the body and to the mind, we simultaneously want to liberate the soul. Because that is our nature. Our nature is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. And even in this world where there is danger at every step, our nature is to find complete shelter and complete happiness in remembering Krishna. And in this age of Kali Yuga, Krishna has made himself so available to everyone and anyone, whoever we are, at any occasion, by chanting the holy name. none different than his name, appear to give us complete shelter and love in his name. So should we fear nature or should we love nature? If we love God, we will love nature, and we will understand that even the fear will be incentive to help us to love, and even the fear will be an incentive to help us to be instruments to help others to love. Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Maharaj, for that very enlightening class. Let us express our gratitude to His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj by loudly chanting. We are very grateful that in spite of his bad health, he has somehow sacrificed some time for inspiring all of you. So we hope that Maharaj has a very successful and wonderful summer tour of America, where he is going to be conducting various programs based on the theme of the book, and many souls are going to be extremely fortunate to get his association and get an opportunity to connect with Srila Prabhupada's movement. So on the behalf of the IYS, let us express our heartfelt prayers for this upcoming summer tour of His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj by loudly chanting. We are very happy to welcome special guests this evening, Sharad Bhosle and family, Mr. Gopasundar Ishwar, Mr. Kanbarkar and family, Dr. Rishikesh Tadwalkar, Dr. Mrs. Vavaikar, Mr. Dinesh Pillai, Mr. Vilas Parab, Mrs. Anu Khanna, Mr. Chamanlal Pandit and family, Mr. Dev Prasad Nishankar, Mr. Anant Jadhav.
Say something about cricket. Coming from America, I don't know anything about cricket. Where I'm from, the only cricket that we know is a little insect that makes sweet sounds at night. But because I love India and its people so much, I hope India wins. And if any of you have any fear that they lose, then chant Krishna's names and it will become love. Thank you very much.
Shivram Prabhu, Kirtan.